Mr. Taylor?
Yes, sir.
Good morning to you. You may approach.
Morning. Hey, please, the court. My name is Matt Taylor, and I'm here on behalf of the appellant, Brenda Gibler. We are asking the court to affirm the decision of the Court of Appeals, which found that there was insufficient evidence of best interest to terminate my client's parental rights and overturned the trial court's decision. What I want to focus on is I don't believe this is a case where it's a matter of whether the state provided enough evidence under subsection 2, 6, or 7. This is simply really a best interest case is what it boils down to. There was one witness that testified for the state in favor of terminating parental rights. That was Allie Gill, who was the caseworker in this matter since March 2015. Now, that was after the termination of parental rights had already been filed. That was filed a month before in February 2015. I think that's relevant in a case like this because obviously at that point, the focus of the case has shifted from reunification to one of termination. The trial was set in June, again, four months after she had started. And during that time, during those 4 months, she never saw my client with her child, never attended a visit. She did testify about the bond between my client and child, even though she had never observed them, based on visitation notes that were offered at the time of trial, based on her contact with other professionals in the case. She did testify, and this is Allie Gill, the caseworker, testified about the progress my client had made. My client made a significant amount of progress, especially from February 2015 to the date of trial in June. She also testified that she was in support of continued contact between my client and her child under certain parameters with the foster parents at that time. But I'd ask the court to consider that's all the evidence from the state as far as the best interest to terminate parental rights. Now, on the other hand, the other witnesses, Jennifer Ratliff, was the therapist for the child from January 2015 up through trial in this matter. And she testified, most importantly, that it was in the best interest of the child to continue the relationship between my client and her child.
Is that the same as not terminating?
Well, I think there's not necessarily that would that always be the case, but here, obviously, in a situation like this, if rights are terminated, there's no way to facilitate unless there is an agreement between foster parents or whoever takes over the child at that point. There's no way to facilitate that contact. So I would argue that at the point of this trial, her testimony insinuated it was not appropriate to terminate parental rights because that would sever that relationship. She testified would be harmful to the child at that point.
Counsel, how long should a child be suspended in foster care waiting for progress of a parent?
Well, and Your Honor, I appreciate that we don't like to let children languish in foster care, but I think the difference here is that what we have to look at is there an improvement in the parent-child relationship, which there clearly was, especially in the last few months leading up to the trial in this matter. In addition, there were several barriers that were in place leading up to that trial that precluded progress. Some of them would be my client's own mental health issues. Some were issues, for example, that the child was in individual therapy with Mary Atwood for only two sessions before. I think it was really just one session, then she had a follow-up session. The child said he wasn't interested in therapy at that point, so they just ended therapy. And then later on, there was when Ms. Ratliff started therapy in 2015, that went on for 1 month before there was a hiatus there due to insurance issues, which have nothing to do with my client. So that, again, precluded progress at a time when my client was making significant progress in all the other issues in this case.
Counsel, isn't there evidence to the effect that even at the time of trial, your client didn't accept or understand that there was a problem to begin with?
I think the evidence, Your Honor, was that she was making progress. She had moved on from part of the barrier at the beginning was when she would meet with these service professionals. She was so preoccupied with her child's health, with her child, how the child was doing in the foster home, that she couldn't focus on her issues or her issues with her child, and that was precluding progress at that point. But from February 2015 on, the testimony was that my client was hospitalized, and at that point, from that point forward, there was progress made in every aspect of this case. She enrolled herself in a housing program. She was attending. The only visits she missed after that period of time, one Ms. Ratliff had canceled, and the other one she missed due to a court hearing. She was finally keeping contact with her case manager. She was signing releases. She was seeing her psychiatrist. Ms. Gill had testified that she was able to verify that my client was still seeing her psychiatrist and getting mental help at that time. I point out that
the trial court judge obviously came to the conclusion that your client wasn't making significant progress. How much deference do we give to the trial court judge in this situation?
Well, I think the problem in a case like this is when these cases last this long and get to a point where terminally hits 15 months and the termination motion is filed, which this is pretty close to that 15-month mark under subsection 7, that it's very hard to overcome. I can't overcome a subsection 7 by virtue of the calendar. That's
what's the finding here.
Was this done solely on subsection 7?
No, there was a subsection 2 and a subsection 6 as well. But I guess the Harper, I've handled many of these cases, and it's very rare to see a therapist testify that strongly at a termination that would harm the child to terminate parental rights. Typically what I see and what I'm sure this court sees is at the point of termination, even the therapists or the professionals that observe the bond between the parent and the child, observe them on a regular basis, would testify quite the opposite, that the child needs permanency. That's what I hear in almost every termination trial. The child needs permanency, and the prolonged placement in foster care was harming the child.
Let me interrupt you here to follow up on the chief's question. The bases here were 2, 6, and 7. Is that correct?
Yes.
So rather than focus on the 15-month opportunity or lack thereof, what's your... What do you think the evidence is on 2 and 6?
Well, for 2 and 6, I point out that there were issues, again, barriers, I believe, that prevented timely progress from my client. One of those, multiple witnesses, Dr. Legrone, Mary Atwood, both testified there were transportation issues with my client. When my client was unable to make certain appointments, they both also testified my client, or Dr. Legrone, excuse me, testified that she would call in and verify that reason why she couldn't make it into an appointment, whatever the case may be. There were issues there. There were issues with the child not wanting to do individual therapy, which created a delay to start family therapy. My client's need for continued mental health treatment was a barrier in the beginning, and it's something that continues to be a service that she participates in now because it's necessary. But Dr. Legrone, the first witness that testified that her symptoms are very treatable. And when he discharged her in August 2014, his only continued recommendation for her was to continue with medication management. That was the recommendation. And we know that in February 2015, when she was hospitalized and afterwards, usually a hospitalization involves medication. Now, one of the points of the Court of Appeals was that there were pieces of evidence that I think they felt were lacking as far as on the state's part, not presenting sufficient evidence on certain issues that they had. But what we know is that after she received that help, everything turned around to the point where even though Ella Gill testified it was in the best interest to terminate, as I stated before, everything else she said about progress, about the bond, all those issues was favorable for my client. And in the end, she too was in agreement with continued contact. And we don't see that.
Counsel, wasn't there still supervised visitation though throughout the entirety of the process?
Yes, there were supervised visits throughout the entire process, and even at the time that Judge Kelly issued the termination order, he granted my motion to continue visitation even while this appeal is pending.
That was supervised visitation.
Supervised and therapeutic was the order.
So there's been no improvement on the visitation aspect of parenting and the child.
Well, I would disagree with that, Your Honor. I think what it never got to a point where there was a recommendation to liberalize visits so they wouldn't have to be fully supervised. But if the visitation notes, they were made part of the record in this case, they do show a bond throughout. And again, she was making significant progress, albeit towards the last few months prior to trial.
Progress of what nature?
Progress in the relationship with her child and therapeutic visits with Jennifer Ratliff, the individual who testified be damaging to terminate their relationship. She was communicating with her case manager. This is all from Allie Gill, the person that testified in favor of termination.
So in essence, she started complying with the court order at that point.
Well,
is that correct?
But this I would make a distinction here. There are many cases where parents don't start full compliance until it's the 11th hour and termination is filed. This case, I would argue, is different because we do have that mental health issue here, and we do have evidence that she was in contact with some of these individuals, maybe not perfect communication with these individuals, but once she started participating, especially after in 2015, she made tremendous progress in those issues.
But I think you're equating her being treatable with adequate parenting.
Well, I believe that it's a person, based on Dr. Legrone's testimony, the medication is managed correctly for, given her symptoms, someone that can make progress in these areas. And so that's why there wasn't any testimony from any expert, any doctor saying, any therapist saying we need to terminate these parental rights because it's damaging the child. It was quite the opposite, because once she is managing her medication and managing her mental health issues, she can parent this child and make progress.
No one's ever testified that she was capable of providing supervision, unsupervised supervision of this child. There was literally no evidence of that, was there?
Your Honor, we did not reach that point, but I would argue that was one of our arguments at the time of trial and in the arguments of the Court of Appeals, was that that's why I felt the termination motion was premature, because, again, 2 weeks before the trial in this matter, she has her best therapeutic visit yet with the child, and 2 weeks later we're in court to terminate her parental rights.
And that's almost the definition of the 11th hour, isn't it?
Yes, but I understand that, Your Honor, but again, this case is not one where it's a person procrastinating because for whatever reason we see in all these cases. This is a person that was able to make progress once the appropriate tools were there. And at the end of the day, the reason the Court of Appeals, in large part, overturned Judge Kelly's decision is because there wasn't enough evidence to support best interests on the record.
Weren't the tools there the whole time, though? Only after the termination petition was filed did there become a change in her behavior?
There were opportunities such as Ms. Atwood, Mary Atwood, could have provided family therapy and did start that process. Ms. Atwood's testimony was that my client didn't make significant progress during those. I think she had two or three sessions between Alec and my client, and said my client was preoccupied with focusing on her child. I do think there were communication issues with my client that caused that referral to cease.
And weren't there attendance issues as well?
There were attendance issues with Ms. Atwood. Now, there have not been attendance issues. The attendance issues with Dr. Legrone, as I stated earlier, my client did call and would explain her absence, but she did miss. But in the end, Dr. Legrone didn't discharge her because of lack of attendance. He discharged her and said she just needs to manage her medication. The situation with Ms. Atwood obviously didn't end as well as it should have, as far as she wasn't discharged for a good reason there. But with Ms. Ratliff, the only other service provider that testified, she was participating in that. And also, Your Honor, she was participating in psychiatric care throughout that time, as evidenced by Ms. Gill's testimony. She testified that she was able to verify my client had continued receiving her psychiatric help. And I realized there wasn't a sufficient amount of evidence by the state or by either side showing that continued compliance other than that testimony. But so the tools, there are services out there, but I think it's easy to say if they're out there, why don't we just act on them? But again, when we're dealing with mental health issues, it's not always that easy. There are no further questions. I appreciate your time.
Thank you very much. Mr. Hernandez, good morning to you.
Good morning, Your Honor. My name is Tony Hernandez. I represent the state in this matter, the appellee. The state would ask that this court overturn or reverse the Court of Appeals ruling that reversed the trial court's ruling that was not in Alec's best interest for his mother's parental rights to be terminated. The state provided sufficient evidence to prove by clear and convincing evidence that it is in Alec's best interest to have his mother's rights terminated for the fact that she has still not remedied her deficiencies enough to allow for, as was previously stated, visitation to move beyond supervised visits. This case came in because of mental health issues, because of drug issues, is adjudicated on those issues. Dispositional orders were entered on those issues. The evidence that was provided was first Dr. LeGroin, who testified that at the beginning of the case, when he was providing medical services, she was not consistent. Her symptoms were very treatable, but due to her lack of compliance, she was eventually discharged without no progress being made with Dr. LeGroin. The second witness was the therapist, Mary Atwood, who provided therapy during the interim of the case, during the beginning and some of the middle part of the case. She testified that, again, the appellant was not consistent with attending her visits, did not make progress, was more worried about Alex, his personal state, his health, than actually working on the issues that she needed to work on so that way she could progress to reunification.
Could you focus us in on fitness? What does the evidence here tell us about how the mother's mental health diagnosis impacted her parenting?
Well, Your Honor, I believe the Court of Appeals wrongly focused on the lack of evidence demonstrating what her mental health issues were. The trial court had adjudicated that continued custody of Alex in his mother's care put Alex at risk for harm because of her mental health issues, and entered dispositional orders to treat and rehabilitate those mental health issues, to go back at termination and then reprove or reintroduce the evidence that demonstrates that the mental health issues are the reason termination is appropriate, I don't believe would be an appropriate use of the court's time, because the trial court has already found that the mental health issues cause risk for harm and required him to be placed in HHS custody and removed from his mother's custody. So simply the fact that the appellant did not rehabilitate the issue that caused the initial risk of harm is what the issue is for the trial court to determine as to what's in Alex's best interest, whether he can return to her custody, not whether the mental health issues at termination are of such a level that require termination. It's the fact that she didn't rehabilitate the mental health issues.
So the fact of lack of rehabilitation or slow rehabilitation goes to several elements in your view?
Yes, Your Honor. It goes to...
Including best interest. Is that your view?
Yes, Your Honor. It goes to sub 2, it goes to sub 6, and sub 7, because this legislature has determined it's not in a child's best interest to remain in care of HHS for 15 of the last 22 months. That's the basis, mechanical procedure of...
But not solely on that basis.
But not solely. It's a presumption that's what the basis of enacting that statute, that a child languishing in foster care for 15 months in and of itself is not in the child's best interest.
Is there evidence in the record that the mental health issues related to drug abuse issues, or what is the evidence about drug abuse?
Again, Your Honor, I would point to the fact that the appellant was adjudicated on drug abuse issues and positional orders were entered to rehabilitate the drug issues. The appellant did not appeal those dispositional orders and say that those dispositional orders are not warranted. The evidence, again, would go to the fact that she failed to rehabilitate herself to a level that allowed for progress to be made for...
So is the evidence that she continued to use drugs?
The evidence at the time of trial was presented through Allie Gill that she did test positive. When she was consistent in demonstrating her rehabilitation by submitting to urinalysis, when she was consistent, those urinalysis tests still came back positive for alcohol, for benzodiazepines, and for marijuana. So the evidence was that she was continuing to use drugs, but the more substantive evidence was the fact that she wasn't consistent participating in the rehabilitative efforts that would allow for her to progress towards reunification.
Counsel, whether there's evidence to support termination, is that an issue of fact or a matter of law?
I'm sorry, sir.
Whether there's sufficient evidence to support termination, is that an issue of fact or an issue of law?
I believe it's an issue of law, Your Honor. I believe that the state presented enough evidence to demonstrate in this particular case that the appellant was not progressing to a level to progress to unsupervised visits, let alone reunification, over a period of 22 months. Despite the minimal amount of progress she made from the time of the filing of the petition, it still, at the time of the adjudication, was not to a level to allow for her to progress from supervised visits, fully supervised or therapeutic visits, to semi-supervised or unsupervised visits. And so based upon the facts of this case, that termination was in.
Counsel, your opposing counsel places a lot of emphasis on the testimony of witness Ratliff. How would you describe that testimony?
I would concede that a bond between a parent and a child is extremely important and something to take into consideration. But unfortunately, a bond between a parent and a child doesn't provide for the child's basic needs. It doesn't make medical decisions. It doesn't make educational decisions. It doesn't ensure that a child is going to be raised in a way that will help the child, that would be in the child's best interest.
So you would characterize Ratliff as saying there's a bond, but there's not a way to fulfill the other requirements.
I would distinguish a bond between parental rights, a legal relationship.
Is it possible to terminate and preserve the bond?
That would be the most ideal situation. A lot of times these kids end up seeking out their biological parents, and if there is a way to carry that out, that the child and the parent can maintain a bond, that would be the most ideal situation. But
was there any mediation in this case? Was there any effort made to, for example, come to that conclusion?
Typically, there are, before termination of parental rights, there are attempts by NFC to facilitate a family group meeting, family group conference, in order to discuss relinquishments, discuss post-termination plans, contact agreements between foster parents and biological parents, but at issue at a termination of parental rights is not the ongoing care. It's the issue at the termination of parental rights is this parent fit to have a legal relationship and be legally responsible for making all the determinations and decisions that are in this child's best interest. That determination as to whether a relationship, continuing relationship, is for a matter afterwards, separate from termination of parental rights. And with that, Your Honor, the state would ask that the Court of Appeals' opinion be reversed and the trial court's order be affirmed.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Is there time for rebuttal? There is no time for rebuttal. We will go on to the next case of the day, which is State versus Richard Pester. This is a re-argument. Mr. Island, good morning to you. Let's give everybody a second to get in and out of the courtroom.